When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition comic book podcast, where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here.
It's good to be here. Happy New Year. Yes, Happy New Year, everybody. This is our first recording in the year of our Lord, 2023.
Speak for yourself with your Lord stuff.
No, it's L-A-W-D. Oh, Lord.
I thought you meant Lord, like the, you know, musician. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we can be royals if we want to be. So anyway, today on the program, dear listeners, you just got lucky because we're going to be discussing Long Shot by Ann Nesenti and Arthur Adams. But before that, we got nothing.
Yeah, no, not really anything.
Yeah, we're pretty much going topicless today. We are we're podcasters gone wild. We got nothing on top.
Well, it's such a weird time because there's not a lot of news. You know, I mean, mercifully, we don't have any major deaths to report, which seems like
that seems kind of callous to say, you know, no one of importance died.
No one's but okay, that's apologies for all those who have lost people dear to them.
Yes. But it's kind of just a lull going on, which is fine.
Rob Liefeld does get murdered regularly on Twitter, but that's
he's been defeated.
It's not a collected edition if there isn't a Rob Liefeld dig.
And we can probably he can probably fit into today's discussion just with art style and such.
Yes,
but we get ahead of ourselves.
Yes,
yes. I mean, there are a couple of things happened. There was a new trailer for Ant-Man Quantumania, which looks fun, really good. I mean,
the kids love the Paul Rudd, you know.
The kids love the Paul Rudd. It's a comic book accurate Kang, which, right. You know, 10 years ago, would you have said, oh yeah, they're going to do Kang the Conqueror in a comic book accurate style? I would have said, shut up. If they do Kang at all, he'll be wearing black leather. And yeah, but no, it looks kind of fun.
He's looking Kangly.
Conquerish. Yes. Yeah. Yes. We're getting, it all comes around.
We tie things in. This is how we do.
Yes. Our planning is meticulous. So, I mean, but what else we got? We got a pregnant Joker.
You got a pregnant Joker that people in certain media markets are very upset about.
Which makes no sense to me.
Right.
Because if you follow that...
Because the story made no sense, which is what it was intended for, because it was a loving throwback to the goofy Batman stories of yesteryear.
Yeah, back when Batman was fun. Remember when Batman was fun? Those good old days.
But, the fact that comic books are... The fact that, like, certain news organizations are now, I mean, they always have been kind of going after, and we go back to Wortham, you know, I mean, the Seduction of the Innocent, but, you know, it just, all of this outrage, and I'm not even talking Comicsgate stuff, which we've covered ad nauseum, it's just the generic outrage about stuff in comic books.
Generic outrage in general. And I've thought about this a little bit, just to digress slightly. The way... it's engagement metrics. And what I mean by that is, you know, back in the old days when there was the movie stars and golden age of film, it was ticket sales. How many tickets did you sell? That's how popular you are, or how important the film was. And then later for television, it was how many viewers you get.
Right.
The Nielsen ratings. And now it's engagement. How many people clicked like or dislike, for that matter? That's still engagement. How many views, how many subscribers? And it doesn't matter what the content is. It only matters how many people have engaged with that content.
Right. And in a lot of instances, the content, they're not engaging with the content because they're not reading the content. They're reading the headline, and it's headline driven. I mean, people talk about clickbait and whatever, but it is, it's headline driven.
Yeah. You see this, especially on things like YouTube and Twitter, where you get intentionally divisive statements or or takes, really bad takes on things. You know, if you enrage people enough, you'll engage them more.
Right.
And it's really not, it's just bad criticism. It's not good.
Well, I mean, it's where we are, and it's what, you know, to be honest, it's where we've always been. It's just magnified.
Yeah. We're hyped up to 11.
What's interesting about all this is that it's possible we're going to read a comic book today or talk about a comic book today where the writer did serious studies in media and social programming, maybe even presaged all of this a little bit in the comic book that she wrote.
Wow.
Look at that. We're tying things in again.
No, it's almost like we planned it, which we didn't.
Which we did not.
No. We just said, you know, behind the curtain thing, we just said, hey, let's just start the podcast and ramble for a bit. And look, we did good. On that high note, let's actually just take a quick break and we'll come back with Longshot because I think there's going to be a lot to talk about.
He has been challenged to read all the comics he has collected. This podcast will summarize, review, and reminisce about a single comic book issue and the time period somewhat chronologically by release date. He keeps a stack of comics near his bedside for when the time is right. Who is this interesting comic fan and what is the podcast? Hello, my name is Pat. I don't normally do podcasts about the comic books I read, but when I do, I podcast about them on The Longbox Crusade. Listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher, or on thelongboxcrusade.com, and check out the Facebook page. Read them all, my friends.
And we're back. Brian, this is your recommendation.
It is.
Tell us all about it.
Most accomplished and noted scholars readily agree that emo was invented sometime between 1599 and 1601 with the writing and production of Shakespeare's tragedy Hamlet, which was not an early precursor to Our Town. Achieving some literary fame over the years, the play features a girlfriend driven slowly mad, a blowhard gas bag constantly pontificating nonsense, and the two most important characters in theater history, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. But it is the titular hero, Hamlet himself, who remains the very standard, ground zero even, of the emo persona. A dithering, indecisive character prone to talking to himself, long existential rants, aimless wandering, and mommy issues. But he is handy with a blade. The scholars also agree that emo reached a modern apex with the publication of Marvel Comics' six-issue limited series Longshot in 1985. Written by Ann Nocenti and illustrated by a young Art Adams, Longshot follows the adventures of a dithering, indecisive character prone to talking to himself, long existential rants, aimless wandering, and daddy issues revolving around the origins of his creation. He is also handy with sharp objects, and he has a mullet, which I bet Hamlet also sported. Longshot, pursued by demons, escapes his world through an interdimensional portal, pulling his pursuers along with him. Arriving on Earth 616, he finds he has no memory of who he is and where he came from. The classic amnesiac hero. He quickly discovers that he has some sort of weird powers revolving around luck, and that's with a capital L. He also adopts a puppy. Throughout these six issues, Longshot makes new friends, gets a girlfriend, fights Spider-Man and She-Hulk, as one does, and does battle against the horrible hordes of the Mojoverse, including Spiral and the nefarious Mojo himself. Along the way, he learns more about himself, the world he is from, and the world he is in. Mistakes are made, but redemption is always right around the corner, and Longshot shares with us all the emotional impact of each moment in monologues. Lots and lots of monologues. He also loses his puppy. Alas, poor pup, we knew him. This is, in truth, a batshit comic book, which is a ton of fun to read. Bolstered by Art Adams' early nightmarish pencils, Nocenti brings her love of existentialism and media/public affairs criticism to bear, mixing the fantastical nature of comics with social criticism. While this tendency can veer into heavy-handedness at times, the story is generally well-served by the mixture. Longshot is very much an 80s comic with suggestions towards the excess of the 90s. but it is certainly an anomaly of the time in both the occasional graphicness of the art and the subversiveness of the text. Though this be madness, yet there is method in it. So, Paul, obviously I recommended this. Would you like to share your feelings, your initial thoughts on the comic book?
Yes. Well, I'm all agog about this comic, which will become clear. Now, this is one of those, I really like this.
Doesn't become clear, though.
No, it doesn't. Well, that's okay. Well, that's exactly where I was going to go. Is I really like this. And we're going to get into some of the details and some of the metaphysics of this that I was fascinated by, but it also is sort of random at times where I kind of said, like, okay, why is like that happening? Luck. Okay, sure.
Kind of like luck, Paul.
Well, it's luck that, you know, scene transitions don't really happen sometimes.
Well, what is a scene transition really in sequential art?
Yes, exactly. No, so there's definitely some things to criticize about it, but overall, I find this a really fascinating book, and it's Anne Nesenti at her purplest in her prose, and it's just wonderful in that respect. And then we can get into Art Adams' art style,
right? Yeah. Art's art,
yes. And we will be praising and assigning blame at the same time.
Yes.
But anyway, yes. So overall, I found this a very good comic. With some questionable choices.
Yeah. I also feel like this is a nice transition because I am an Anne Nesenti fan, and I really love a lot of her work. And I feel like this is a nice transition from the, let's be honest, terrible Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
And then when she went on to write one of my favorite arcs, arguably of Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And so this is solidly in between. And I think it's also solidly in between in many other ways.
Right. And, you know, and even we had issues with Beauty and the Beast, but there was still like her brilliance did shine through from time to time.
Right.
Just in a turn of phrase or a wonderful description. So there's goodness in that. pile of whatever that is Beauty and the Beast. But sure. Here, we're starting to see Anne Nesenti's social consciousness sort of come to the forefront.
Yes.
But also that philosophical, metaphysical, almost psychedelia, if you wanted to call it that, come out.
Yeah. Well, and I think I think that's where Art Adams serves the story well. I mean, his visuals, particularly with the Mojoverse, and we really see like the Mojoverse later outside of Longshot when Mojo and Longshot and Spiral and some of the other characters also enter into the Marvel Universe proper.
Right. And I do want to point out, I know we're probably going to talk about this in greater detail later, but Mojo in this comic is very different from what he will become. He is just unhinged in this.
Yes.
I mean, legitimately frightening. In this, Anne Nesenti writes him with just this manic insanity, which I just appreciated. Give me more. Just be a whole comic of Mojo. I'd be happy with that.
I want a whole comic of this Mojo. Now it teeters on the line between too much. There are times when it's like a little much, but it never, or it gets close to being a little much, but I feel like it doesn't quite, it doesn't go over that line. Mm-hmm. And so it's, and we'll talk about Mojo more, but like there are laugh out loud moments involving Mojo. And I think one of the things about this comic is with all of the sort of critique and satire, there's a lot of satire, but people, it is a funny comic book. At some points.
Oh, and yeah, absolutely.
Primarily Mojo that is the comic relief. I would say Elliot and Jinx also have some comic relief to them, although with Jinx, it's like a very dark humor.
Mojo goes from, you know, oh, he's very funny to, oh, that was terrifying. And also, you didn't mention in your intro just how absolutely beautiful Longshot is. He's so gorgeous.
He's so handsome.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, he's dreamy.
Isn't he just?
He's just the end, Daddy-O.
Yeah, I kept reading this thinking, everyone thinks he's lovely. Is he, though? Is he? Because that mullet, I don't know. Do you want to get into the story first, or should we talk about art style?
We can dive into the story. I mean, the story is, it's interesting because obviously it starts off as an everyman journey, right? I mean, it's Longshot walking, well, not really the Earth. It's supposed to be New York, but sometimes it's in the country.
Yeah, well, upstate New York.
It's also in New York.
It starts out very episodic, and then it sort of transitions into this little mini series, like where it's
right. It builds upon itself, which is actually there are narratively it works. I think. The story starts off with Longshot running from these horrific looking demons, and you know he gets sucked into this portal that of course leads him to New York, because where else would you end up? I mean, it's Marvel, so you know he's not going to end up in Nebraska.
No, I think there isn't anywhere else in Marvel other than New York and San Francisco.
Yes, I think that you are correct. Well, I mean, doesn't LA exist briefly in the West Coast Avengers? Or wait, are they in San Diego?
No, I think they're in LA.
So LA does exist. We know LA is a place that exists. Chicago does not, as far as I could tell, exist in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. I believe Detroit exists.
Oh, right. Yes. Place. Well,
but it doesn't. But Detroit doesn't exist in reality. So,
no. Yeah. I mean, it's so the first issue is it's a lot of introduction, and it does allow for Longshot to ramble about and emote. There's a lot of emoting.
But that is kind of part of his brand, I guess you'd say. I have to admit, one of the things, I don't really care for the amnesiac protagonist. It works kind of well here, but, you know, I find it tedious after a while, especially since, you know, it just kind of goes on for a while.
Right. And a lot of the plot points revolve around nobody who knows who he is will tell him who he is.
Exactly.
And which breaks a lot of comic book rules, because the villains always have to overexpound. And so here the villains are like not, you know, going on long diatribes where they spill out the entire history and plot of a character.
Well, even the people who are allies don't tell him anything.
Right.
I mean, because you have Ram Man who could have sat. Yes, Quark. I prefer Ram Man. Thank you very much. It could have just sat him down and said, hey, before we put our fedoras on, can we just have a conversation? And yes, they do put fedoras on. Cowboy hats.
Said cowboy hats. That's
Yeah, it is more of a cowboy hat. You're right.
At some point, it required them to put on hats.
Yes.
Longshot arrives, you know, and we have the quick establishment where he arrives and he saves an old woman from getting hit by a car. And then a whole bunch of money spills out of a gargoyle. And various other things like happen where we establish, oh, he's lucky, or there's something about the randomness of luck that follows him and guides like who he is.
And it's sort of like this Rube Goldberg machine of luck.
Right.
Because one thing leads to another thing, which leads to another thing.
And it's quickly established, or we learn relatively quickly that his powers are based on probability and luck probability. And I'm not an expert on these things, but this is kind of his skill set. He also has, we find out he can read psychic links.
Yes, they have a specific name for that, which I'm blanking on right now. But yes, he can read the probability. Well, he can read an object or a person. He can read something that in their past, but also into their future as well.
Right.
You can see probabilities into their future, which is very interesting.
It is. I mean, I think Longshot has a very, it's a superpower that hasn't really existed, at least in the Marvel Universe up to this point. I mean, I think we get, I think Gambit eventually gets some of the same powers, at least.
Yes. And then we have, you know, as with all things Rob Liefeld, he steals from other people. So we get Domino.
Right.
It's also luck-based.
Longshot establishes himself. He's confused. He doesn't know where he is. He starts wandering around the streets of New York, and he meets the conspiracy theorist, Elliot. who I'm assigning Rosencrantz. We'll get to Guildenstern later.
Sympathetic conspiracy theorist militia man. Interesting. It was the 80s. So it was a different time.
Except I feel like Eliot still exists in this day and age. But
yes, but not as sympathetic. That's what I'm saying.
Not as sympathetic. So Eliot's kind of fun. Eliot kind of takes Longshot. You know, he thinks Longshot is like him and takes him under wing and
gives him a name.
And it's Eliot who assigns him the name Longshot. Eventually, Longshot ends up. And he befriends a pup who is a demon with motives that are not quite clear.
And at the end of the comic, I don't think those motives are quite clear.
No, never really.
Resolved there.
Yeah.
But we do get an insight. We feel our first insight into the motivations of Longshot, because they see this. There's a baby that has been kidnapped. And he immediately says, we need to go save that baby.
We have to save the baby.
Yes. And Eliot says, no, you know, that's not our job. But he says, no. And this is, you know, you get into Longshot. He thinks this needs to be done. We have to go do it.
Right.
He has a straightforward morality and purpose. I see this thing and it must be fixed.
And eventually it is established that it's his luck is based on purity of motive.
Exactly. We can get into the mechanics of his power, because there's a little bit more to it as well, because in order for him to have luck, someone else has to have luck removed.
Right.
Now, that's usually the person he's fighting, but it could be something else as well. Again, we'll get into it because it becomes an issue later.
I mean, basically, in the first issue, we have the arrival of the hero and the hero meeting allies, trying to make an initial quest, which is saving the baby, which they do.
But it turns out that it's these demons that he drew in to this universe who are trying to get back using the power of Spiral.
Spiral's another character that I end up kind of liking for weird reasons, although much later after Longshot has ended, we find out a lot more about Spiral, which is interesting.
Yes, I actually had to look that up. So it was like Spiral. I kind of remember her her future, aka her past. But again, we're going to get into it.
Right. Longshot and Eliot team up with Hester, the woman who has lost her baby. Mm-hmm. And they go and they take on the demons for the first time. And demons and Spiral. Certain things are established about the demons. Like they're here, but they're not here.
Yes, they're trapped between worlds.
They're trapped between worlds, which, why are they trapped between worlds, but Longshot isn't?
Because he's lucky.
Because he's lucky.
It's one of those things where you can hand wave it. It's magic.
It's magic.
Because
it might be magic with a CK. We don't know. You know, a lot of things are, so the baby's saved. There's some fight sequences and lots of exciting things happen, and they save the baby. And then Eliot tells Longshot that he needs money, and Longshot is, what is this money you speak of?
I know not how this world works.
Right. Yes. And then Longshot and Pup go on their separate ways. They separate from Eliot.
And it should be mentioned, Pup, every time Longshot meets up with Pup, something, he's kind of growing. Like, he'll spikes, yeah, and horns will start to grow and he'll get bigger. Right.
Pup keeps changing throughout the comic, and we hit that eventually.
there was a joke there. I'm just going to move on.
Yep. So in the next issue, we have Pup and Longshot jump on a train.
Yes, but it's not just any train. It's covered in barbed wire and spikes and very Road Warrior-esque.
Road Warrior, yes. And of course, what we find out, of course, is this is a movie set, which Longshot didn't know, but it turns out Longshot does not have a positive feeling about movies.
He has, he starts having flashbacks.
Yes.
To his previous life, where he was a rebel leader movie star.
As one does.
Yes. We will see this in the future. So, you know, Mojo goes on to be an X-Men villain, and he becomes the personification of the entertainment industry in a way. So you get glimpses of that here.
Right. Yeah. And the big takeaway from this issue is this, that Longshot has a strange relationship with film, and that he meets Ricochet Rita.
Love Ricochet Rita, who Art Adams based on Ann Nesenti.
Yes.
That's her look. Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. There's lots of little... Art Adams based a lot of people on real people. Like later, there's someone named Jackson who looks like Michael Jackson, because of course. So we get that sort of thing all the way through. But Ricochet Rita is based on Ann Nesenti. Very nice.
And Longshot and Ricochet Rita meet cute. There's some sexual tension between them. Hooray. So, but Longshot then gets hired onto this movie set as a stuntman. Because, of course he does. He just randomly shows up, jumps on a train.
Well, right there, that's great. He sees a train and he just says, let's jump on it. Because that's what you do to trains, apparently.
Yes. And so they jump on the train and the director, Hitch, just decides that because, you know, Longshot looks great, he's going to be a stuntman.
First of all, can we talk about the movies this guy's making?
This is 1985, 1986, Paul. Of course, these are the movies he's making.
Well, it's not just that. It's like he believes that stunts should be done for real. So right. No safety protocols. And he has jetpacks and lasers. Where is he getting the money for this? Who's funding this film? That's what I want to know.
Well, but we were promised jetpacks, so we get them.
I know. If he can get his hands on jetpacks, why don't we all have jetpacks?
I know. But the crux, the million-dollar, the stunt that should be done in real time is, and this is some of Nocenti's media studies, this is really strong in this issue.
Yes.
The commentary on media and media studies is pretty strong. In this issue, we get Longshot's pure motives tested. Because in the previous issue, Elliot told Longshot that he needs money. The director then suggests to Longshot, after he's been the stuntman for a while in the film, that he wants to do real stunts with real consequences, life and death stunts, and he calls them $1 million stunt. And so he is saying, I will pay you, Longshot, $1 million to do this stunt. So because Elliot has told Longshot that Longshot needs money, Longshot decides, oh, so his motive for doing this stunt is to get money.
Yes,
he can't. Well, it turns out that the purity of his motive is money, and therefore it's not pure.
Exactly, it's selfishness. So he can't be doing things for himself. He has to be altruistic about it.
Right,
and working for money, that's not pure.
And so, of course, his luck runs out. The stunt goes awry, and the director, thinking Longshot is dead, goes and dumps him in a swamp.
He does that. I mean, there's we can go deep into this, the ethics of this director, of Hitch. You know, it's the exploitation of the workers and all that matters. Because there's Longshot gets beat up really brutally on this shot. I mean, and it actually is, for 1985, it's pretty bloody.
A lot of the images in this comic are pretty horrific, especially once we get to the mojo parts of it, but just in general.
But this is all happening and he's getting beat up because, you know, as we said, Longshot's kryptonite is ethics, I guess. But as he's getting, you know, really beaten up, Hitch is just saying, film it. Just keep filming it. Doesn't matter.
It's like, don't turn the camera off. And
yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as we get the shot, it's fine. Again, Ann Nesenti really laying it out there. She lays it on thick at first, and then it just sort of, and I don't know if you agree with this, it just like she throws everything at you and it seems pretty heavy handed, but then it gets subtler as it goes along.
She makes it work.
Yeah.
She makes it work in the plot and in the overall theme of the comic. I mean, this is a 1985 comic book. It should just be big, dumb, and stupid. But instead, there's stuff.
Yeah, there's stuff. Absolutely. Is there more you want to say about Hitch?
No, I mean, he's a gross, over-characterized indictment of the Hollywood and media industry. Yeah.
Wearing a Captain America shirt, by the way. which says something visually right there. The appropriation of patriotism. Anyway, we could get it. We don't want to get into that.
But so then we move on to issue three. So they dump Longshot into a river. And in issue three, we meet Theodore, or Jinx, as he's called. And this is where I get a little confused. I think there's a suggestion made here about luck, which we'll get to, that they don't quite fully exploit that I think they could have in this issue. But Theodore has bad luck, or Jinx, as he's called. Yes. It just his whole life is just shambles.
Right. Well, it's very stereotypical thing too. The nagging wife, and he has a bad job, and the kids are running amok.
Right.
They say he's behind on his bills. And
he's tired of brushing his teeth every day.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes him snap. He finally realizes, I'm going to have to do the same thing over and over again for the rest of my life. And he decides to kill himself.
But not before shooting out the TV with his gun.
An absolutely brilliant page, by the way. Because it was menacing. You watch this, he's brushing his teeth, you see him snap, he gets the gun, and the way it's, you know, all credit to Art Adams for this was just an amazing sequence, and you think something really terrible is going to happen, but he shoots the TV and then runs away.
Which some would say is a really terrible thing.
Well, yes, but I thought it was going to be, you know, full-on murder, but he only murdered a TV.
So Jinx heads out to kill himself, and he jumps off a bridge. Now, this bridge isn't very high up.
No. And the fact that he ends up landing on Longshot, which saves him. He gets saved by falling on Longshot, which I don't think that's how gravity works, but okay.
He's not falling far enough that the fall would have taken him out anyway.
That's true.
And so, of course, then we have some of the existential crisis switch. So through all of these first two issues, we have Longshot just is going on and on and on and on and on about his existential crisis. Jinx lands on Longshot in this issue, then is like, oh, well, I better save this guy. But then now Jinx is suddenly like, well, what if he doesn't want to be saved? Oh, my goodness, should I save him? What can I do? I mean, that's but he ends up saving him.
He ends up saving him, and he gives a little, you know, he gives these nice little, and this is multiple times throughout the issues where Longshot talks about the beauty of life and how great it is to be alive.
Right. Suddenly Longshot is happy, is pro-life, as it were. You know, meanwhile, while Longshot is rambling on about how great life is, in the background, Elliot finds rope. One always finds a length of rope on a bridge. And
well, of course.
Yeah. Trying to hang himself off the bridge. So Longshot saves Elliot's life. Meanwhile, Elliot never takes the noose off.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I guess the implication...
Or not is... Elliot. I'm sorry, Jinx.
Jinx.
I called him Elliot a bunch of times.
It's all right. But
Jinx is Guildenstern. Elliot is Rosencrantz.
I mean, the implication here... is, and it's never really directly spelled out, but this gets into the, if for Longshot to be lucky, someone else has to be unlucky. And you see kind of the, you know, the backlash against Jinx, because Jinx ends up following Longshot. He finds out that this electric company or a utilities company is stealing diamonds.
Right. Well, they're not stealing. Jinx is very upset that, like earlier on, he's complaining about how much his electric or gas or his bills are, and he, of course, he blames Con Ed.
Yes.
Which is also Elliot references Con Ed earlier in a couple issues ago. And so at some point, Jinx on the TV before he shoots it out, they're talking about $1 million shipment of diamonds, which doesn't seem like a lot of diamonds to me, but you know, somehow Jinx and Longshot hatch up this idea that, let's go take these diamonds from Con Ed and give them to the people or give them to whoever needs the money. So apparently the diamonds are being held in the basement of Con Ed, the Con Ed building. And we know this because Jinx read it in the paper.
Yeah, of course, because when you have something, you know, really precious, you tell everyone where it is.
Right, and it's clearly stated in the...
And it's precise location, yes.
Yes, it's precise location. Jinx and Longshot set out to go to the Con Ed facility or bunker or whatever it is, which I guess takes them about 2 or 3 minutes to get to. they just walk like a little bit and they're like, oh, hey, there it is.
Well, it's the local utilities company. So obviously it's just a hop, skip and a jump away.
And so they proceed to, break into the facility. Luckily, there's only like 3 guards in the entire building.
Luckily,
one of which is in the basement with the diamonds and 2 of them are in the control room. So they easily get into the building and make their way to the basement to get the diamonds. But lo and behold,
coincidentally, the demons are there
with Spiral, because apparently the diamonds are a way for them to get back to their homeworld or their dimension.
Again, the whole theme of luck throughout this, it's lucky that Longshot went there because his story converges around his powers. That's not the right way to say it, but he instinctively knows where to go because he needs to be there. So it's lucky that he showed up.
Yes.
Am I explaining that correctly? I'm not, but that's okay.
No, it's we could get into the themes here after we get through the sort of generic. But so there's a battle ensues, as it does. Jinx gets taken off the table by Pup, who is still lingering around in all of this.
Who's now getting huge and
getting bigger and bigger and bigger and angrier and angrier and angrier.
And he hates Longshot, which, you know, you can kind of understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Longshot's kind of annoying. but at some point, then they knock out all the power.
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
That's a stellar power plant right there.
Yeah. Which, of course, leads to one of the best moments in the comic, which is a scene of J. Jonah Jameson.
Has to be Spider-Man.
Yeah, where it's just that great moment where he's like, this must be. And then, one of the people standing with him is sitting there going, here it comes. Wait for it. And J. Jonah Jameson is like, this must be Spider-Man's fault.
Yeah. That's Peter Parker in the background, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going like, go ahead, say it.
Which is pretty fun.
Yes, it is.
But eventually, Longshot is knocked out and he's tied up. And they use some of the diamonds Spiral uses the diamonds to do a little dance. And the demons get to go back to their dimension.
So they eventually do get out of this. And Jinx knocks his teeth out.
Yeah, poor Jinx. He gets his nose broken, his teeth knocked out. His shirt is ruined because he broke a pen in it. He's got the noose hanging around his neck.
And this is what I was saying before, which is like, Longshot's getting really lucky, but it's taking it away from Jinx. So we actually see the ramifications of Longshot's luck and bystander, because usually it's the person Longshot is fighting who loses their luck. But this is just some random guy. So it's not all peaches and cream.
But while the demons are heading back to their universe or dimension, Longshot's like, tell me who I am. And they're like, we're not going to kill you and we're not going to tell you who you are. You just have to stay here and be an amnesiac.
Yeah, there's still 3 more issues. We can't tell you yet.
Meanwhile, Pup decides to stay behind. And a mysterious demon named Quark also opts to stay behind.
Otherwise known as Ram Man.
Yeah, as Ram Man.
So far in this, we've been getting, like I said, very episodic, little things happening here and there.
Right.
Nothing's really tying together, but that changes come the next issue.
Starting to knit. There's some knitting going on, but it's kind of in the background. So Jinx decides that he doesn't want the diamonds, and he's really mad at Longshot because Longshot is perfect and handsome and has the best mullet and all these good things happen, and Jinx is just really upset about this. So he says he doesn't want the diamonds and tells Longshot that he should give the diamonds away to the people whose lives Longshot has ruined because of the blackout.
And you know what? Jinx isn't wrong.
Right.
He does. Jinx does have a happy ending of sorts because he doesn't have to brush his teeth anymore.
He doesn't, and he gathers some flowers, right, because he knocked all his teeth out, and he gathers some flowers up and decides to go home to his wife and kids, which probably, let's be honest, is just his life is not going to end well going forward, but we never see him again. So,
well, that's just, you know, we never hear anything bad about him. So maybe he's got a new lease on life and everything's good.
A new perspective.
Yeah. Exactly.
So at the end of issue 3, Longshot is tasked with giving away the diamonds. So of course, in issue 4, that's what he goes to do. And nobody will take his diamonds because they don't really believe that they're real, which is weird because in all of the newspapers, there are images of Longshot stealing the diamonds.
And on TV, which makes the other superheroes in New York want to go out and find him.
Right, as they do. The issue 4 starts off, there's this weird thing at the beginning of issue 4. So we meet these kids that are going to become an integral part of the story, and they're dressed like the Star Jammers, and they're playing with guns and doing whatever. And there's this whole long several pages of like this father and mother talking about TV and comics and guns and talking to the kids and like, you know, what is the responsible thing? And the dad is pro-gun and he's like, you know, everybody should be armed. And the mom is like, but he's against television, and the mom is like against the guns, but she's for television. And it's just, it goes on a bit. It doesn't make a ton of sense for the comic, except that the final scene with the parents, whose faces are not shown, it's like out of Peanuts, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Doing like, rah, 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 rah.
Exactly. I was going to say that. Yeah.
But then you see the darkened face of the dad looking down, and it's Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. So it's Ronald and Nancy having a little, and it's weird because that conversation plays very differently today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back then, I guess it was sort of tongue in cheek and funny. Now it's like, oh, okay, this is like real world consequences happening.
But so we have that, and then so a Longshot then comes onto the scene, and he meets the kids and he gives them the diamonds. And the young girl in the group of kids, Darla, just thinks he's the dreamiest thing ever on the face.
He's so handsome.
Yes. He gives them the diamonds, and then they're like, we're gonna buy comics with this.
Of course you do. It's Diamond Comics.
There
you go.
So then, you know, Longshot wanders off again, and then he fights with She-Hulk,
who wants to chase his tail.
Mm-hmm. And then he fights with Spider-Man.
Which I find, you know, because Spider-Man's just doing his, mocking, wisecracking things. But Longshot's just like, well, why? Why are you being so mean to me? I don't understand. I would point out we're mocking Longshot a lot because he's easily mocked, but there is something kind of, you know, endearing to his innocence.
Oh yeah. No, yeah, I like the character.
Yeah. But yeah, his all, you know, life is grand and everyone should be nice to each other. It's nice.
But you know, I mean the two, like, let's have Longshot battle. It feels very editorially mandated, shall we say?
It's very Jim Shooter, who was the editor at the time.
Let's bump the sales up and put in not just She-Hulk, but She-Hulk and Spider-Man.
Yeah, who were big sellers at the time. Or because She-Hulk mentions that she's in the Fantastic Four.
So it's a lot of cross...
cross-promotion. Synergy, as they say, the kids say.
Yes, the kids love the synergy. There's not a lot that goes on in this issue, except we get the major sort of Mojo World and Mojo moment, or the beginning of it.
Right. And this is where you find out, you see how just deranged Mojo is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we finally get full-on Mojo time because the demons return.
Full-on
Mojo time. So the demons return to the Mojo dimension, Mojo World, Mojo Verse, whatever it's called at any given time. And we get our full-on first, like, serious introduction of Mojo. And he's nuts. I mean, yeah. He is like Polonius times 1,000.
Absolutely. He is one of the spineless ones who is just sort of a blob.
Right.
And you find out that they have created Longshot's people in the image of their evil myth, their scariest nightmare myth, because they actually have spines and bones and stuff, whereas
right.
Mojo's just this blob.
Right. And yeah. They're the spineless ones, they don't want to walk because they don't want to exert energy, because then that takes them away from thinking in their minds and, you know, whatever. So Mojo is just an intensely grotesque looking character.
Yes. And his mind goes back and forth. So he summons slave girls and then he says, "Why are you here?" immediately. Right. And he tells everyone has to look like him. So everyone has to. Yeah, so everyone has to wear masks of Mojo in order to honor him. But then he says, "We're all mocking me for wearing my face." So you never, and he's so unhinged and he's so random that's legitimately frightening.
Yeah, and Art Adams draws the hell out of Mojo. In every scene that Mojo is in this comic, Art Adams draws the hell out of him. It's fantastic.
Yes, yes.
It is just...
Yes, we need to go into the art of Art Adams.
Which we will get to, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
But the biggest takeaway, like, kind of from this comic, besides the fact that we're introduced to the Starjammer kids, which is what I'm going to call them, it's this whole scene on Mojo World where we find out where... So the demons come back and they tell Mojo, no, these humans, these upright walking... humanoids are real, and there's a whole dimension populated by them. And Mojo, of course, loses his shit about the matter.
Because these slaves could be given hope, and right. they could realize that there's more to life than just being a slave.
Because they were created just to be slaves and just to be like movie actors. So it's kind of cool. But the other big takeaway from this is Spiral and Mojo then decide they're going to go back to Earth because Mojo wants to see this for himself.
Right. So you find out that Spiral and Mojo's magic, their powers in conjunction, can open up portals to other worlds.
And the other big takeaway is that Longshot eventually, after his silly little fights with She-Hulk and Spider-Man, goes back to find the kids, and the kids have actually used the diamonds he gave them to buy a real gun.
Yeah.
Because one of them has seen Pup. And so they're scared, so they buy a real gun. Longshot psychically reads the gun and sees the history of the gun, which has been used for violence. And yeah, so Longshot and the kids, so the kids have the gun. Longshot hooks up with them again. And then he and Longshot and the kids then find Pup, and things look like they're going to get kind of nasty because Pup is really...
We find that he's been absorbing the residual magic in the world, and he has just bloated himself with magic, and he's got extra arms and horns.
And eyes popping out at random places. So
Pup is officially full demon mode.
Right. So switching to issue 5, some big things happen, but also some really weird stuff. So we have a big fight between Longshot and Pup. And Pup is called Gog and Magog.
Which is strange because his dad is
Gog.
Gog. So he's Gog and Magog. And it was...
I don't quite get the whole Gog and Magog thing. This continues throughout. I don't really have anything to say about it, except that it's a name that is used for Pup. That right. doesn't seem to have a lot of significance until we get to Mark Waid's Kingdom Come. I mean, we know Gog and Magog are mythic.
Well, yeah, it's very Revelation.
Yeah.
So it should be stated, this series was supposed to be the introduction to an ongoing, which never materialized.
Right.
So there's a possibility that Gog and Magog would have been explained later.
Makes sense later on, but it doesn't make a lot of sense in this. So that's why I feel like I'm just going to keep calling him Pup.
Pup is fine. Or eventually you're going to call him Pop.
Well, here in a minute or two.
Yes.
This is weird. So there's a huge fight between Longshot and Pup because Pup is just completely lost it and wants to absolutely kill and destroy Longshot.
And he's ridiculing Longshot and It depowers him by taking away his motivation.
Right. And this is where, so the excessive emo nature of Longshot really comes to the fore in some points. At some point, because he's internalizing it all. He's having monologues like crazy.
Yeah.
He can't fight back.
Yeah. He's demoralized. And when he doesn't have, a focus, when he doesn't have a purpose, an altruistic purpose, he just doesn't have any power. He just becomes an emo kid.
Yeah. And so he gets the crap beat out of him. So the kids who adored him, like the Star Jammers, turn on him. There's some dialogue that, well, boy, howdy, you would not use now. Like, a lot of like sissy and things like that thrown out there, which is, I don't want to give modern reading to older things, but I also found it seemed really excessive, just the level to which particularly the main kid was really kind of ripping Longshot.
Yeah. It makes sense in context to, well, first of all, the era, but also Reagan's America and the conversation we just heard with the dad and the mom, that the kid would absorb that and then translate it into this. Yeah. So there can be a reading that, he's the kid is just mimicking what he's been taught. If you want to do a nice modern reading to it.
Yeah. But then what happens is then Quark,
Ram Man
shows up and jumps into the fray.
Turns out he's a good guy.
We have had no reason to really think about this character at all until suddenly out of nowhere he just shows up. We know he stayed behind, but we don't know why. And he's like, I'm here to save Longshot. And then he takes on Pup. And the kids are suddenly like, Quark's our guy. We love this guy.
It's the fickle nature of the audience.
Right. And so eventually Pup kind of wins out over Quark, and Quark just separates his head and his head flies away, which is awesome.
It is. So he's not really in this. He's in both worlds at the same time. So he's able to de-incorporate.
Yes.
Is that a word?
I think so.
Sure.
And while this is going on, we finally get Doctor Strange.
So Doctor Strange has been, hanging out, and he feels that there's some, he notices that there's been some portals being opened. And that's his MO.
Right. And so because he's Doctor Strange, he says, what goes on here?
Something unusual is happening.
Something wicked this way comes.
Something strange, you might say.
So, like, he gets involved, or we see him kind of following along or trying to figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, it turns out, and this happened in an earlier issue, that Mojo and Spiral, when they came back to Earth, they kidnapped Ricochet Rita.
Because they were able to figure out that Ricochet Rita had some connection with Longshot.
Yes.
So by kidnapping her, they can make their way to Longshot. It's, it's convoluted logic, but it does work.
We have then a brief page and a half, which I think is one of the most horrific parts of this comic.
Yeah, it really is.
Where they have captured Ricochet Rita. They took her back to their dimension, and they have tied, Mojo and Spiral have tied her to the prow of this, spaceship. Literally a boat, a ship, like we would think of.
Yeah, so in an interdimensional ship that she is forced to stare into the void of eternity.
And she's silently screaming. She can't close her eyes. It's a really awful scene.
And I am going to...
On purpose.
Yes. And I am going to mention this because it's not... We had talked about whether we wanted to or not, but we're gonna. So it's not stated in this series, but future series will say that Spiral actually is a future version of Ricochet Rita, gone back in time. And it makes this scene even more horrific because she is tying herself to the prow, which will eventually cause her downfall.
And make her who she is.
And make her who she is. And that's just awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's some fridging going on here, but it's very affecting bit of the comic that I think is handled well by Nocenti in terms of it creates that idea that Mojo is more than just a nutty Polonius-style airbag.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is a little more, is really quite evil.
Yes, really more menacing than just some silly thing. And the fact that Ricochet Rita doesn't die, so she's not, she might have been chilled, but she wasn't fridged.
So during all, I have nothing more to add to that. but during some point in all of this, Longshot has another flashback, and this is where we're introduced to Arise, who is his creator. And then we get the history of all of this, whereas the Spineless Ones, Arise created legs, fake legs for them, various other things.
Well, he was a Spineless One himself, but he actually created mechanical spine, a spine for himself and legs for himself.
We have Longshot remembering this, and we have Arise basically telling Longshot, you are not created, you are genetically modified, meaning you are real, you are a living being. And Arise talks about how he inserted this concept of free will and rebellion into these creations,
which DeSenti calls planned obsolescence, which is really interesting phrasing.
Yeah,
you know, so he's creating these products that are built to break down, but the breakdown actually causes free will. It's really interesting, turning 80s tech terminology on its head.
So then towards the end of the comic, we have Longshot and Doctor Strange meeting and then teaming up. But a much better team up than the Spider-Man She-Hulk part, because Doctor Strange actually serves a purpose.
He decides to actually talk to him rather than start punching immediately.
Right. At the end of it, Longshot and Doctor Strange team up and they go after Pop. Yes. And it's really kind of a cool sequence, because what Doctor Strange does is he feeds magic into... They know that Pop is absorbing magic. So what Doctor Strange does is he feeds in tons of magic into Pop.
So he blows up like a balloon.
Blows up like a balloon. And then Longshot just pops him.
Yeah, because, you know, Longshot wears a bandolier full of little blades.
That are constantly being refreshed for reasons that we can't quite figure out.
Or maybe they're interdimensional pouches. Yeah. And he can just, he reaches into the tiny knife universe.
It's the early origin of pouches.
Yes. Actually, this is the origin of pouches. This is ground zero.
Yes.
Again, we'll get into this when we talk about Art Adams's art style, but this is where blame can be just assigned. Directly give it out. Yes.
We shall be assigning blame here.
Absolutely.
All of this, of course, leads into the double-sized.
Well, you know, could have just been a 7 issue. No, 6 issue double-sized maximum.
This is an even number. Which leads us into the final issue.
Mojo at this point has decided he wants to be worshipped by human beings and mind wipes a bunch of people in order to build a tower to manifest his evilness and he will be worshipped.
Yeah. Wherever he and Spiral go, because he's Mojo, everything dies around him. So while Mojo and Spiral are creating this weird tower cathedral thing in his image to be worshipped, Longshot finds Rita. Doctor Strange takes her to heal her. Quark and Longshot put on cowboy hats and go to look for Mojo.
And color-coordinated outfits.
Color-coordinated outfits.
Because you need to. Little rodeo outfits.
Now, this is also a weird issue, because Longshot... So Quark has now taken over for Longshot as the emo character. Because this whole issue is just Quark talking about how he wants to die and how he's nothing and he's garbage and he's...
Well, we also find out that Quark is also the same, you know, genetically modified person as, you know, so he also has those luck powers, but he has lost lost his motivation. He's lost his mojo, you might say. So he doesn't have the luck. I was going to say the luck of the Irish, but that's not right. Yeah, Quark has lost his... You know, he's lost his luck power.
His luck power.
Because of his, because, you know, he's filled with emo. The antithesis of luck is emo.
It's emo. So, at some point, Mojo, Spiral, Quark, and Longshot fight. Longshot can't kill Mojo, which is an issue. Eventually, they wander off, as they do. and they try to use a telephone. It's a very funny scene. Longshot and Quark trying to figure out how to use a telephone to call Doctor Strange on the telephone.
And of course, the voice of Longshot rescues Ricochet Rita.
Yes. So when they finally get on the phone, Ricochet Rita hears Longshot's voice and is revived because she's like in a weird silent screen coma throughout all of, like, because of what has happened to her. Longshot has figured out that all of Mojo's power is in the cathedral, because I think Spiral spilled the beans at some point, pontificating as they're fighting. So they hatch a plan.
A plan has hatched.
A plan has hatched. Doctor Strange stays behind. Quark and Longshot get like a bunch of bombs and guns and stuff from Ricochet Rita's apartment. They go to attack the cathedral, the Mojo's cathedral.
See, this is where they should have brought Elliot in.
Well, they really needed Elliot here.
Yeah, Elliot probably had all kinds of munitions to be used.
Yeah. So there's a long fight scene. Doctor Strange and Rita arrive to save the day. Mojo says one of the greatest lines in comic book history, which is, "Backbones are for the weak. I shall always be spineless." A portal is created. An interdimensional portal is created. Mojo gets pushed into the portal. Spiral follows him. And then Longshot, Rita, and Quark decide to follow him into the interdimensional portal.
Because, and they're going off into new adventures that we never get to see. It's actually very... Longshot's a tragic character because he never actually wins. You know, it's sort of like he's more motivation for others.
He's kind of incapable of winning because winning suggests motives that might not be pure. And also that he can't just pull his head out of his ass long enough. If he spent as much time being proactive as he spent on long, long, long monologues about existentialism.
I kind of like that, though. I enjoy his mopey monologues.
It's very, you know, it's Marvel. It's Marvel 80s, right? I mean, we all know what Marvel does. Marvel is wordy.
No, and especially at this time. I mean, you have Nascente is one of them, and Chris Claremont, of course. Why say something in one sentence when you could use 12? Yeah, I know I'm making jokes, but I'm not criticizing. I love this stuff. Yeah, especially in this comic, some of Nascente's descriptions and her monologues are brilliant. I love reading them.
Oh yeah, no, I enjoy this comic immensely, and I think that there are a lot of really interesting ideas being bandied about. You know, I think that the creation of she created some very lasting characters in this. With Longshot, of course, has had a long, so to speak, career. In Marvel, Spiral has become an important character in Marvel now, and Mojo going forward has been some of my favorite. Now, I don't follow Marvel as closely as you do, particularly in the X-Men, but you know, there's so many interesting ideas.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea of, like I talked about in the beginning, the mechanics of Longshot's power, that if he doesn't have an altruistic pure motivation, then it just doesn't work. And then you couple that with the idea that for his power to work, he has to take something from someone else.
Right.
So there's an ethical dilemma there as well. So the metaphysics of Longshot, you know, dissertations could be done on that. It's he's not just a straightforward character.
Right.
He's not just, you know, big muscles and he can punch him up. He doesn't just have lightning powers. There's a moral dilemma with everything he does.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a really interesting take to have in a comic at this time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I feel like this Longshot is the comic is a kind of an outlier for this period in Marvel and in comics. We still hadn't really had the, you know, Alan Moore was doing his thing, but we hadn't, Vertigo didn't exist yet. DC and Epic might, I don't remember when Epic started, but in mainstream comics, there's a lot of things in this comic book that don't fit with the mainstream.
At that same time, there's a lot of things in this comic which will be adopted and taken forward. This is sort of, like I said earlier, this is ground zero for a lot of things. And the emo, you know, self-inspection that you see in the 90s kind of starts here.
Which leads us to the elephant in the room, which is the art.
Yes. The first thing I want to say, if I may, thing I want to say about Art Adams is it is undeniable. He is an incredibly talented artist, and his style has been influential. It is undeniable his impact on comics.
Right.
All that being said, and this is where the nuance comes in, I don't like it.
Interesting.
I don't like his style. That being said, the faces are very expressive. The way he draws action, I appreciate what he does, even if I don't aesthetically care for it. I think that kind of nuance gets lost in what we were talking about in the beginning, where it has to be good or bad. You like it or you don't like it.
I mean, I think he's the perfect artist for this type of thing.
Oh, yeah. No one draws a mullet like he does.
I feel like he draws Warlock better than anybody else. Well, no, I take that back. Bill Sienkiewicz draws Warlock better than everybody
else. That's true.
Bill Sienkiewicz draws everything better than everybody else. But
that's true. I should say, like, yes, maybe I don't aesthetically like it, mm-hmm. but I do appreciate it. And looking at this comic, he's perfect for what the story that's being told right now.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it works fantastically well for, especially on Mojo World and Mojo and that sort of overly exaggerated style. Like, he's perfect for it. I can't see like a house illustrator doing as good a job. But also, and you alluded to this earlier, he's kind of responsible for the sins of the 90s.
Indeed. That long, lanky kind of long faces that are kind of compressed and mullets and pouches and eye flares, large weapons. He's the creation of all this.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it started here. Yeah. Now,
well, no, I actually looked this up. I actually looked this up. This is the first instance of an eye flare.
Okay.
Which would go on. And it was also, Art Adams said, during the creation of Longshot, he always hated that weapons could be produced from nowhere on these characters who have like skin tight outfits and they suddenly pull out a gun. So he gave Longshot specifically that bandolier.
Which
led to pouches. So he is the pouch man. He is the, this is the progenitor of pouches. He is.
Somewhere Cable is smiling.
He gets credit and or blame, depending on your your feeling on this.
Yeah, but I think overall, I'm really glad we reread this, and I feel I'm going to emote about the comic. I think there are a ton of very interesting ideas being thrown out in this comic book. I think some of them work, some of them don't work, some of them don't take fruition until much later, even with other writers kind of latching on to some of the stuff Nocenti put out there in this comic. I don't know if it works 100%. There's too many kind of loose, weird things.
And I said kind of in the beginning, you know, sometimes the scene transitions are very abrupt. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, well, why did that happen? But it's okay. Just let it happen. Right. Again, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. But she also, at this point, was not really what one would call a professional comic book writer. Beauty and the Beast and a couple, like, short pieces here and there before this. She was an assistant editor. But, you know, she's said in interviews that she didn't come from a comic book background. She didn't read comics growing up. Like, with her taking some of these ideas and being able to, like, put them on the page and working through them throughout this 6-issue series, it set the stage for some of her work that would come later. And, of course, she works extensively outside of comics. She's a very accomplished critic and media critic and writer in her own right, no pun intended. You know, it felt like it reading this, I was remembering her work in, like, say, Daredevil. Interestingly enough, with John Romita Jr., who shares some similarities with Art Adams in terms of not the same style, but stylization. It just, I enjoyed the heck out of this. And I think that she deserves so much credit for the creation of, I think, Mojo in particular, to be honest.
Yeah.
Even more than Longshot and Spiral.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, Anna Santi's brilliant. And I think working with Art Adams at this time really accentuated that, you know, she's getting these ideas out there and she's coming up with some really different takes on comic books than was happening at the time, as you mentioned, and to have Art Adams there to try to make that reality.
Because he was young and hungry as well.
Yeah. But she came up with Mojo and he said, does it look like this? And it's like, yes, absolutely. So it's a good partnership. It was a good team to have working on this. I'm kind of upset that it didn't get to continue because it would have been interesting to see what an ongoing.
Where it was supposed to go, because if what I read, we probably read some of the same things, and
yeah.
It's going to be a series of adventures into the multi into various dimensions.
Exactly.
And Mephisto was going to be involved.
Well, yeah, it was. Yeah, so
Mephisto meet Mojo.
Right. So it would have been Mojo as the instrument of Mephisto. I guess that would have been the case. I don't know. It would have been very interesting to see where it went to.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, yeah. It's never happened. But how fun would that be?
It really would have been an interesting. It's one of those interesting what could have beens.
Sure.
In comic books. But Longshot as a character, I don't know a heck of a. I mean, I've read several things, but not everything about Longshot.
He had a pretty successful career at Marvel. Oh. I mean, it's weird to me that he. So I don't follow X-Men very closely.
There's too much to know everything.
There's too much. But I know that he was a member. Like he basically became like part of the mutant world.
Yes, he gets. He eventually does get pulled into the 616, and he joins Excalibur. I think it's so complicated. I don't know. but I'd love
to. Actual X-Man for a while too,
maybe. And there's I haven't
one of
read
our
it.
Thousands of listeners is screaming at us right now.
Yeah, well, there is one mini that I haven't read, which is Longshot saves the Marvel universe, something like that, which apparently is incredibly good. I have not read it, so I cannot speak to it. But as far as a character, I alluded to this earlier, where his enthusiasm is very endearing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and his idea, it might sound naive, but the idea that if you care hard enough, if you love something, if you really want the best to happen, it will. And I think that's a really good way to live, just in general, especially to have it as your superpower. So he's more inspirational than effective as a superhero. Yeah, but I like him. I like it. So thanks for recommending this. It was really good to go. I was kind of cringing when you recommended it. It's like, I remember it being good, but that doesn't always pan out.
No, it certainly doesn't.
Yeah, but this was like refreshing that it was like, oh, this is still good. Cool.
Speaking of remembering things being good.
Ooh. So would you like to know what we're going to read next?
I would like to know what we're going to read next.
Well, my recommendation... it's going to be an easy one. I'm going to recommend The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Volume 1.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
It's only 6 issues, but this is the copyright-free character extravaganza from the mind of crazy wizard man, Alan Moore.
They have to keep Wikipedia up for the entirety of...
Yes. And of course, there's art by Kevin O'Neill.
Yeah.
This will be a research-heavy 2 weeks for us, Brian. Well, at least for me, because I have to write the introduction and talk coherently about the, you know, plethora of references. this is one of those classic series, the pantheon of classic series. And it's Alan Moore, which we should do Alan Moore. So, yeah, this should be fun, I think.
Oh, I think it'll be fun.
I'm actually reading Dracula, rereading Dracula, I should say. as we speak. Well, not as we speak. I'm not reading it at this moment, but it's on that table. I can see from my desk where I'm recording this. Yes. Anyway, that's what we're reading. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Volume 1.
Something to look forward to.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Let us know what you think about Longshot. You can go to collectededitionpodcast.com, where I've revamped the website again because, you know, it's what I do. And I'm putting up as articles. So if you're tired of listening to us, you can actually read us as well. And all these fancy introductions that we do are going up as articles on the website because we're pretty creative people. These are fun.
Meanwhile, on this end, crickets.
So anyway, check us out. Leave comments. Let us know what you think about Longshot. Also, hit us up on Twitter at CollectedEdPod. That's Collected EDPOD. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at @CollectedEdPod. That's Collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?